on Inside Utah Politics. The governor has spoken. Find out how he treated the 582 bills passed by the legislature this year and whether a special session could be coming. The Sundance Film Festival is leaving Utah. A top member of the bid committee tells us why keeping them might have always been a lost cause. And Senator Mike Lee pitches court reform, how he hopes to streamline the process for challenging presidential actions.
You're listening to Inside Utah Politics with Lindsay Ehrens.
Well, thanks for joining us today. I'm Lindsay Ehrens. Let's go inside Utah politics. So we begin our program with the governor's final word on the 2025 general session of the Utah legislature. Now, he shared this photo of the thousands of pages of bills his office reviewed over the last 20 days. An hour and a half before his deadline, late Thursday night, the governor signed most of the remaining bills. He issued four vetoes blocking property tax reform, a mineral procurement system, tweaks to municipal elections, and a trade commission with Ireland from becoming law. Now, that brings us to a grand total of vetoes to six, having blocked reforms to manage property tax revenue and appointing the Chief Justice of the state Supreme Court earlier in the week. Now, he also called for a special session to tweak two bills that he did sign. To help us make sense of all of this and charts what's next for Utah politics, I'm joined by Taylor Morgan. He's a partner and policy advocacy firm, Morgan May Public Affairs, and Leah Murray, professor of political science at Weber State University. Leah, Taylor, thank you for being with me. Okay, let's dive into this. First and foremost, we didn't mention it there, but he did not sign or veto the Pride Flag bill. This would have prohibited Pride flags in schools and on government property. Taylor, let me start with you. Just what do you make of him not putting pen to paper on that?
This is such a controversial bill. It has become even more so in the last few days with the Sundance Film Festival leaving the state of Utah for Colorado. And of course, the Sundance Film Festival is saying the flag bill is not the reason they are leaving, yet there is a lot of speculation about this bill. I think Governor Cox may have missed a political opportunity here. Clearly, by not signing the bill, he expressed objections to the bill, and he's made that clear. He has concerns about the bill. He even went as far as to say that he wanted the parties to come back to the negotiating table to improve the bill. What I would have liked to have seen is the governor forcing that negotiation in a veto override session by vetoing the bill. I would have really liked to see that. I think Utahns are looking for leadership from their governor. In the absence of that kind of direct, bold leadership, our legislature has stepped into that vacuum of power and is they're really the face and the power in our state right now.
Yeah, Leah, what do you make of that? Should he have force the veto, like Taylor's saying, or should he have just, you know, like he did, let it become law?
Well, I think it depends on what game the governor is playing, right? So I think he has got to be plotting out what his next political moves are. I see that as a real cover your bum kind of move. Does that make sense? So I don't want to have to explain to anybody why I didn't want this piece of legislation. I don't want to have to explain to anybody why I was okay with this piece of legislation. So by not saying anything, it allows me to move in the game accordingly, next steps, without having necessarily to predict what's going
to
happen.
And to continue the sports metaphor, Governor Cox is a game manager right now. Governor Cox, the way I see it, is he is playing not to lose. And in politics, which is a sport, you have to play to win. And myself, other Utah Republicans, we didn't sign up for caffeine-free Spencer Cox. We want the real thing.
Yeah.
We want to see the bold leadership, the principled centrist leadership coming from Governor Spencer Cox. I believe that is his political future. I want to see more of that.
Is he kind of playing to both sides here, where he's making moderates mad a little bit, but also that for the right faction of his party, he's trying to play to them as well? And so by doing both, he's making both sides mad.
I mean, I think the interesting thing, and that's what I was thinking about, kind of what is the end game in what he's doing? Is he running for the next gubernatorial election, right? So I felt it was possible we are pivoting away from a caucus convention year, right? And then you get more centrist policy direction because he doesn't have to answer to those people or get booed by those people for a little bit of a while. But I think your point's well taken. If he has got different ambitions, what did you say, the strong centrist Republican? If this is a message about what the party should be nationally, maybe what the party should be statewide, right? Then I'm not sure what the end game is, but that's a different conversation.
Yeah, and I might be overly critical of Governor Cox because as a political strategist, I'm looking ahead. But recent polling that came out right after the session shows that Governor Cox has high approval numbers among all kinds of voters. Even among Trump first Republicans, his approval rating is 79%. So to his credit, he's doing something right. I just don't think it can last.
Part of what was in this bill that he doesn't like is the fact that it goes too far on local governments. This pride flag ban is also applies to cities, municipalities, counties, government property. He thinks that may have constitutional implications. Do you guys foresee a lawsuit coming over this bill?
Well, I have a question about this because I'm not sure that any municipality has independence from the state anyway. So this is not the same situation where the Utah state government's frustrated with the national government and sues. But do correct me if I'm wrong on that. I think municipalities live and die by the grace, if you will, of the Utah state government, therefore what the legislature and governor want. So I don't find that to be particularly compelling.
There was a lot of conversation about this during the session and in House and Senate committee hearings on this bill. In fact, in the Senate committee, there was an attorney from Legislative Research there who directly addressed this question about the constitutionality. I don't know that that will hold up. Look, I think we will see litigation. We will see lawsuits. And again, I think that bill could have been improved, which is why I'm disappointed there's not a veto override session to bring parties back to the table.
Let's switch topics to a little bit. Another bill he did veto, did put his signature on. This would have appointed the Supreme Court justice of the Utah State Supreme Court. Now, the interesting thing to me about this is this reaction from the president and speaker said that Governor Cox undermined a compromise. When we were back during the session, there was this whole compromise with the judicial branch where it said, we'll kill these bills, these won't move forward, you don't oppose these, and everyone was kumbaya. Was the governor part of that compromise? And if so, did he undermine that here by vetoing this bill? It sounds like the speaker and the president were a little bit surprised by it.
Right, but of course he could if he wanted to. I mean, the point is he has the last word, right? Mm-hmm. So they had to, just to push that metaphor of a game, they've got to understand that if they are compromising with him early, he is under no obligation, right?
Yeah.
I mean,
maybe
politically he is, but he's under no obligation to deliver on that compromise 20 days after the session is done.
Interesting political move here. I'm not sure I understand it. This bill would have given Governor Cox more power. It would have given him the ability to choose the Chief Justice of the state Supreme Court. Of course, that choice would have to be confirmed by the legislature. Let's be clear, the courts were neutral on that bill. They did not oppose that bill. It was part of the compromise package. Perhaps Governor Cox's real concern was he didn't want the future Chief Justice to have to go to the legislature every 4 years to be grilled by lawmakers, but that's already part of the process. Again, an odd veto in a dynamic where the governor is trying to maximize his power relative to the legislature, to veto this bill undermines that.
Mm. Okay, another bill he did veto, the so-called circuit breaker bill. This has to do with property tax relief programs for seniors. So there was a bill that would have gotten rid of some of the programs, eventually basically just made it harder for people on fixed incomes who qualify for their property taxes to be reduced to access these programs. Your thoughts on this, just whether this was a good veto or not?
I think it's a complicated bill. I think ultimately this comes down to local control, to letting cities and counties ultimately have the say over property tax dollars. There's a lot more to it than that. Mm-hmm. But ultimately, I think this was a relatively easy, obvious veto for Governor Cox.
Yeah. Another one dealing with property taxes that he did veto, Senate Bill 37. This was kind of a, I don't know if workaround is the right word to Amendment A, but essentially our property taxes flow into our local schools from our local property taxes. This would have given the money to the state for the state to then send back out. One Democrat on the House floor called this akin to money laundering. I mean, do you guys see it the same way? Or was this just too hard with the accounting? Or is it the right structure where we pool all our property tax money and then allow some equalization, right, to send those taxes back out because some areas have higher property values than other areas in the state.
Yeah, I mean, I think that when talking about that bill, it made sense to me, but I don't think it was explained very well, right? Mm-hmm. So when a Democrat is saying it feels like money laundering, I'm not sure that's what was happening. But on this veto, the auditor came out and said, not a good idea. So then a little bit, Taylor and Lindsay, we are adding another part of the executive branch to that conversation, mm-hmm. having an argument with the legislature. And sometimes I do think the state legislature looks like it's, how do I say, pooling power, right? So when you see, I want you to be nominating a chief justice, that looks like them pulling power from the judiciary. When you see them saying, I want to take property tax money from localities and make decisions about it, feels like they're pulling power. So to Taylor's earlier point, the governor vetoing this here might be leveraging along that horizontal checks and balances.
Yeah, and I agree with that. I think this, right, the consolidation of power by this legislature has been done to a historic degree. This is probably the most powerful legislature in Utah's history. And this bill, I think, was a very problematic Band-Aid when it comes to funding education in Utah in general. We have issues, right? We know that our state income tax is earmarked constitutionally to go to education spending. Amendment A would have dealt with that. Lawmakers want more flexibility with education spending. They argue doing that would allow them to spend more on education. Of course, not all critics agree with that. I think ultimately, yeah, this bill was problematic in the way that it put power in the hands of the state legislature unnecessarily, could cause more problems than it solved.
Yeah. In our final minute here, just talk to me about your thoughts on Sundance leaving Utah. Politics obviously could have played a factor. How much do you think it did? How much was it about the money?
Yeah, I mean, I think it has to have been about the money. But I have to think that the money wasn't enough of a difference that I can't say that the political climate, not the pride flag bill, right, but just the political climate in Utah overall for probably the last little while maybe makes that money differential, like hit differently.
There are some Utah Democrats who are trying to blame the pride flag bill for Sundance leaving. I don't think that's the case.
It's too soon, or like it's too recent or something.
Listen, Utah politically has always been at odds with Hollywood. This isn't something new. We're the home of Robert Redford. Sundance Film Festival without Park City will fail. I'm sorry, Boulder, Colorado, it's a beautiful place. It's a great place to go to a Dead & Company concert, to watch a football game. It is not a ski town. It is not a place to hold a film festival. I don't know how many five-star hotels there are in Boulder, but I'll tell you what, there's no St. Regis or Montage.
No, that's true.
And it will not work. And just like the Outdoor Industry Association, the Outdoor Retailers Convention, which left the state due to politics a decade ago, they also went to Colorado. Sundance will be back. They will not survive without Park City.
We shall see. It'll be at least 10 years, so we'll see if that does happen. Taylor Morgan, Morgan & May, Public Affairs, and Leah Murray with the Walker Institute of Politics at Weber State. Thank you both so much for your insights today. Coming up on Inside Utah Politics, what does the Salt Lake County mayor have to say about the Sundance Film Festival leaving? Why Jenny Wilson thinks the festival was never going to stay? Stay with us.
You're listening to Inside Utah Politics with Lindsay Ehrens.
Well, welcome back. The Sundance Film Festival has made its decision. It will be leaving the state of Utah for Boulder, Colorado in 2027. Now, a who's who of Utah political heavy hitters were involved in the failed bid to keep the festival, one of whom was Salt Lake County Mayor Jenny Wilson. I got a chance to catch up with the mayor shortly after the shocking announcement, and she tells me while it's a disappointing day, it's also a reminder of how the festival has changed.
Well, I think this is a disappointing day. And I'll tell you, this is not the Sundance organization that we have known of the past. And I think it's evidenced by this decision.
What do you mean by that? It's not the organization of the past.
Well, you know, I was lucky enough to be one of the first, maybe even 12 employees years and years ago when Robert Redford founded the Sundance Institute. I was actually on staff when we launched the Sundance Film Festival and was there in those early years. And Redford's vision in the 70s and then years after that to foster independent film and storytelling was the heart of the Sundance Institute and the Sundance Film Festival. Over the year, it became more about parties, it became more about gatherings. I think the connections are still vital. It's just a very different era now. And I think the impacts are different than for the organization, the state, and my county than in the past.
So you think the festival has changed and become more about kind of that festive atmosphere as opposed to the films?
The festival has changed. Independent filmmaking has changed. You have a lot more Netflix type arrangements rather than, you know, young, committed, hungry filmmakers looking for the deal. So Sundance has had to adapt to that, but all the while, this place, people love Park City. They don't care about the snow. In fact, the snow makes it more exciting. It's such an intimate environment. It's also incredibly accessible to get to Salt Lake County and then to Park City for the festival. And I'll tell you, I think that the folks that bid, Salt Lake City, Salt Lake County, the state, other partners, philanthropists, we put in a very, very good bid, recognizing the change at Sundance. And I think, I'll be honest to say, I don't think the board necessarily ever meant to stay. I think we went through a lot of effort. I think there are some people who do not recognize. I'm a blue mayor in a red state, but I can still build and support all voices in this community. Sundance was supporting all voices in this community. There were legislators who said stupid things, frankly, in the end. One legislator, maybe others, but I was aware of one. That mattered in the end, but really the point I was making is we need Sundance's voice in this red state. You'll have more impact here, your voice, in a red state than a blue state like Colorado. And then I would add, just the logistics are going to be difficult for Boulder. I love Boulder. I've been there a few times. Great college town, but it is hard to get there from Los Angeles and other locations. It's hard for people who want to enjoy film for just a long weekend to get there. So I think they have some barriers and yeah, I find it disappointing.
Well, you heard it, some strong words there from Mayor Wilson. Now, it's worth noting that the bid package added up to over $200 million in public and private money, in-kind donations over the next 10 years. But some have speculated that politics played a role in the festival's departure, with some reporting that a board member was displeased with Utah's new pride flag ban. Well, you heard a bit about that there. That speculation heightened after blue state Colorado won out. Now, I asked Mayor Wilson if she thought it played a role, and she says it certainly didn't help.
I haven't gone through a session where I haven't strongly opposed much of the kind of hurtful intent. You know, there are certain legislators who want to make a point. Do they really change the lives of people on the ground? I think if the pride flag is important to you, perhaps it impacts you. I'm really caring about policies that impact our communities. So the nuisance bills, if they really do, I care about. I will tell you, the timing was not good, right, to actually move hurtful legislation and make comments that were not accurate. And I think as you look at a 35-member vote, that's the footprint of people who voted, and a close vote, clearly legislative conservative noise that was meant to be divisive in the end was not helpful.
So you're saying it's not helpful. Sundance came out and said the decision wasn't political, but you're saying it wasn't helpful.
Well, I just don't think the timing was great. You know, we were at the end of the session. Sometimes people just really want red meat and want to say things. And fair enough, it was a limited voice that made comments, but it wasn't at a good time. Just as board members perhaps were hearing things that were not representative of our state as a whole, and assuming that that the legislators would have some impact. I mean, Sundance navigated through that for years, so perhaps that was not the point, but I do think it mattered.
But that deadline article, how accurate was it? Was that said? Was it part of their calculation?
Well, the article itself was actually included a tweet that was not pulled down, as I understand it, that was disparaging to Sundance, and I don't think that helps. Correct.
Interesting.
I should also point out, it seemed from my early conversations with Sundance that this was really about financial bottom line. And I do think I support the arts through county's budget, through the county's budget. The state does as well. We need a web of partners to make a nonprofit organization successful. So I do not discount the role of our government stepping in and supporting Sundance, Salt Lake County has for years. Our ZAP program, our ZAP program supports Sundance. But I will say that it seemed like they were chasing money. And if you are looking at change due to shifting conditions in the industry, and indeed they were, more of a burden due to COVID and people being more interested in seeing product in a different way, it is up to you as an organization to solve those problems, not go out and say, hey, I mean, even the idea of an RFP for an arts organization, I found offensive from the beginning. We have been here, we have contributed, the state, the county, Park City, could we do it differently? Absolutely. Were we open to those possibilities? And what we saw is many, many people stepping up to say, hey, look what the next 50 years can mean. That work was done. We had done it well. It seems to me like they were chasing the money.
Well, you heard it there. But before we wrap up our conversation, I got the chance to ask the mayor what it would look like for Sundance to come back. They may have signed a 10-year deal in Boulder, but stranger things have happened.
Well, outdoor retailers, you know, let's remember the outdoor retailer story. They were angry about politics. The point I made at that time is like, look, support me, a more progressive voice here in this state. We need you. And off they went, and they realized the grass isn't always greener, and they're back.
Well, if Sundance does not come back, there seems to be plans in the works to replace it. The governor told his followers on X that he is in talks with creatives and other stakeholders to create a new film festival that honors Utah's legacy. Now, two of the wealthiest men in the state, Ryan Smith and Matthew Prince, responded to say they're on board. Well, coming up, Senator Mike Lee's take on the courts, how he hopes to prevent executive actions from getting bogged down in limbo with lawsuits. Stay with us.
You're listening to Inside Utah Politics with Lindsay Ehrens.
Well, Secretary of Defense Pete Hegseth is facing calls for investigations and even his resignation over sensitive military information leaking to a reporter. Now, last Monday, the editor-in-chief of The Atlantic revealed he'd been accidentally added to a group chat that included the vice president, defense secretary, secretary of state, and top intelligence officials. Now, the message thread took place on Signal, an encrypted online messaging app. It included sensitive details about military operations against Houthi targets in Yemen just before strikes took place on March 15th. Now, the Democratic leaders and some high-ranking Republicans want answers.
If you were up in arms over unsecure emails years ago, you should certainly be outraged by this.
Well, a National Security Council spokesperson confirmed the text chain, said, quote, appears to be authentic, adding that they're reviewing how an inadvertent number was added to the chain. Senator Mike Lee tells Fox News that calls for Hegseth's resignation are, quote, amusing, especially given that the strikes were successful. Now, speaking of Senator Mike Lee, he's introduced legislation to make it harder for one court to block national actions from the president. His new bill would make it so any lawsuit seeking an injunction against the president goes to a special panel of three district court judges. Now, the panel would be appointed by the Chief Justice of the Supreme Court. Two of those three judges would have to agree on a ruling. And there hasn't been a vote on this bill, but his colleagues in the House seem to be on the same page.
It violates separation of powers when a judge thinks that they can enjoin something that a president is doing that the American people voted for. That is not what the founders intended.
Well, it comes as the Trump administration butts heads with federal judges over how much authority they have over the president's deportation plans. Well, Utah's push to regulate vaping just scored a huge win in court. A ban on most flavored vapes is now in effect. The law passed last year would ban flavors other than mint tobacco and menthol, along with any product without FDA approval. It was set to go into effect on New Year's Day until the vape industry sued to block it. But this week, a judge let those restrictions roll out, but not the surprise inspections meant to enforce them. Now, the vape industry advocates tell us they believe the ban only benefits big tobacco companies and will prop up a black market for flavored vapes from other states.
These products, these flavored tobacco products, are available for sale online on social media. They're available for sale in nearby states. And so you're going to see consumers, adult consumers, look for alternative means to purchase these products. And the black market is going to facilitate that. And as a result, it's going to subject adult consumers to completely unregulated flavored vapor products.
Now, the Utah Attorney General's office is celebrating the ruling as a win. AG Derek Brown gave us a statement that reads in part, quote, "I am thrilled that Utah will now be able to better protect children from the harms of tobacco." Well, that does it for today's Inside Utah Politics. Don't forget, if you have any local political stories you'd like to see, make sure to reach out. You can email insideutahpolitics@abc4.com. You can also follow along with me on social media. I'm on X, Blue Sky, and Threads. Lindsay on Air on Instagram as well. Just search for Lindsay Ertz, and Lindsay spelled with an A. You can also find our show online in podcast form. Just search for Inside Utah Politics with Lindsay Ertz anywhere you get your podcasts. We'll be back next week. Thanks for being with us, everyone.